Shanti. So this is about karma. And I will talk a bit now until our break at 10:30, which is for half an hour, not a second more. And then we will have chit-chat. So you're welcome to prepare questions, and any question is acceptable, even if I can't answer it. That's okay. So, karma. What's up? Okay, karma is very simple and very complicated. So I will do a little bit simple and a lot complicated. I hope that's okay. Also, there is something called drama. Have you heard about that? Drama. So, you know, in our early morning class today, it was suggested to us that for the entire day, we should think of ourselves as actors. Can you do that? And there's a performance going on. It's a movie, three-dimensional movie, and we're all actors in it, and we're the audience as well. And movies are for the purpose of entertainment. You pay good money to see people being shot to pieces and thrown off the tops of roofs and, you know, all sorts of things like that, which in real life would be considered awful, but in the movie it's entertainment. Right? Yes? Okay. So for today, we need to think about life as a 3D movie, just for today at least. And that the purpose of it is, I think we better call it edutainment. It's a bit educational as well as entertaining. And the reason why it's a good idea to think of it as entertainment is so that we do not get overwhelmed and overcome by the horrific things that occasionally do happen in life, and which make us or break us. Hopefully it makes us. So karma is action. So we have lights, camera, action. And karma could be good or bad or neutral. Three possibilities. And there are consequences of karma. So every time you do any action, there is a result, which is called also the fruit of karma. You could have sweet fruit, you could have bitter fruit, but whatever it is, when the fruit comes, you have to eat it. So, better if it's sweet. But when it's bitter, you have to take the bitter fruit. So there's a lot of acceptance involved in working with the idea of karma. Now, karma could be a thought. That would be an act of mind. Anytime you think anything, that's karma. Even the things that you don't even notice you're thinking is still karma. There are still consequences. You still have to take the consequences of it. Could be a verbal karma, anything you say or write is also karma. And any other kind of physical action you do. And the way that you interpret circumstances, things that happen to you, this is also karma, I see. So at every step you are free to do good or bad, or I'll tell you about neutral later. Good and bad in terms of the laws of karma may be somewhat different from what you're used to in terms of good and bad. And So I will define it a little bit more precisely, and then you can see if you agree with it. There's a context in which we do our karma, and the context is the consequences of whatever had gone before. So you may have attended some sessions where it was described that you're a soul and that you're eternal and immortal. Is that right? So, you know, eternity is an extremely long time. And it's a bit mind-boggling to think that there has never been any time when I personally, as an individual me-self, did not exist. So that's already quite heavy. And we have no clue what happened before our current lifetime. So in BK we always talk about multiple lifetimes. And we think that you could have a minimum of one. Some people have only one lifetime, that's a bit short. And then a maximum of 84 lives in any cycle of lives. And then there's unlimited number of cycles. So, you know, gazillions of years. And you have never not been you yourself. You cannot become somebody else. So the self that you are may get a different body, and you have the exact same number of male bodies as you do female bodies, unless you get an odd number of lives, in which case one is slightly more than the other. But on the whole, when you think of yourself like this, that you're not either male or female, but you have the capacity for both in there somewhere. But you're still the same self. You can be the same self in male format or the same self in female format. And the way you present yourself in different lifetimes depends on many, many things, and mostly your script. So the other aspect which complicates the whole thing a lot is everything is predestined, but you don't know what it is until it's over, in which case it's history. So all these are ideas. Do not think of what I'm telling you as facts, because facts you can argue about, ideas you have to think about. So these are ideas. And the purpose of an idea is to think about things maybe differently from the way you're used to thinking about them. That gives you a different angle on things, a different perspective. So there you are in the present moment. You have some kind of past and some kind of future. And whatever is in the past, you can remember some of it. And whatever is in the future, you may have some premonition of it. Sometimes people are sensitive to the future in that way. So you can remember the past, and actually you can also remember the future. Because things happen in cycles, so that at any point in the cycle of time, if you say that point is the present moment, whatever is clockwise forward is future and clockwise backwards is the past. And if you go all the way back to the beginning, then that becomes the future. So, right? The future keeps coming towards the present, then you experience it, then it goes into the past, and keep going, and it becomes another future. So that means it is a fixed thing. It's inside a circle. And the totality of that circle corresponds to all the possibilities there are within you individually. Are you following me all right? Now, every time you experience anything, you experience it actually not out here, but in here. Right? You have eyes for seeing, and whatever you see out here is actually registered in your brain and in your mind and in your soul. So where it's actually occurring in terms of an experience is in your being, and then otherwise it's out here. So you're already working with two dimensions, the outside and the inside. And all the other people experience what you see on the outside, they see it from their angle, so it's a bit different. And there's a wonderful Japanese story, and I forgot its name for a minute, which talks about a murder, and which is seen by four different people, and none of them see it the way it actually is. So, what is real? Hard to say. So, we're going to be talking about perception. And we're also talking about a calculation. So, if we're good in maths, that's good. But you have to also be quite good in subtle perception as well as calculation. So in the soul, they must have told you that you have an intellect and you have a mind, yeah? So your mind is where you experience things. Sorry, I'm too hot when I talk too much. So in your mind is like an organ of perception. And your mind will perceive the things that your sense organs allow to come in. And then you also have a focus of attention. So when you are focused on something, you will experience that more than the things that are in your peripheral vision, for example. And there may be some things that you don't notice, so then you don't experience them, even though they're there. They might as well not be. You see, it can get quite complicated. So then the other thing we have to be aware about is that we have emotions. We have feelings about things. And we think something is pleasant, something is unpleasant, something is good, something is bad, something is nice, something is nasty. And then the other thing is we have ego problems. I guess everybody has one, right? And this is very important because it's a mask that we use, and which is very brittle. And sometimes we get fused with our mask. And when we get fused with our mask, then we become reactive when any attack happens to our mask. That attack happens to us, right? So in spiritual practice, we always think that we should unfuse from all these masks. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes? So we actors have many masks, and we have a right to our masks, and they're good masks, as long as we know that they're masks, because we use them. You see, right now I'm performing the role of talking to you, and I have a mask of whatever this is, and then when I go and have lunch with you, then I become somebody else, a different mask, you know. And we all do that. And when we are doing karma in a state of being fused with our mask, there's a risk of doing negative karma. And what we're trying to do here is minimize that risk. And for that, we have to practice to be detached. So one practice is to imagine yourself to be about maybe 2 inches behind your eyes. So there's a distance between you and what you're seeing. And what that practice does, it gives you an edge, a second or two, between how you feel yourself to be and what is happening that you're perceiving, and it gives you an option to choose how you're going to respond to it. So you become more proactive than reactive through this practice, and that's quite useful. Now, when you look at another human being and you see their face is, can you take off this fan? Yeah, their face is anyway a mask. And you can read a person's face because it's the window of the soul. So whatever is the facial expression, that will indicate what's going on in your mind, in your heart, in your feelings. So you pick that up when you see another person. And people have body language, so you pick up that as well. But we have a tendency to identify with our gender because it's pretty visible. Yeah, this is a man, this is a woman. Oh, yeah, yesterday I saw this guy who was all dressed up in a sari, and I thought, you know, these feet are a bit large. This is not a woman. And then I was seeing him from the back, and then I went around the front, and I said, yeah, he has a big beard, so that's definitely a guy. But nowadays, you know, a lot of people are not quite sure I'm a man or I'm a woman, or sometimes I'm a man, sometimes I'm a woman. So it used to be a big problem, but now it's so common that it's kind of normal. And people are not upset by that in the way they used to be. But in spirituality, we have to really think, you know, I have all possibilities inside me. I could do anything. I can perform anything I want. And then you also have to see that inside you, there are individual characteristics that are personal to you in a configuration that cannot be replicated by any other person. So we each have our individuality, and we are very, very different from all the other people, including the ones who we think are very similar to us. They're very similar for the first few days, and then after a while you think, I don't know what I saw in this person being the same as me. It's not. Because as you have layers, and you go deep and deep and deep. And part of the practice of spirituality is to figure out, who am I? And, you know, I mean, somebody told me the other day that there's 50 different people in you. I said, okay, that's fair enough. But, you know, there's many people. And different personalities emerge at different times for different purposes. And some people are very straightforward and simple, not too many people in there. And some people are very complicated and difficult to deal with. But that's okay. Everybody has a right to be who they are. And not only that, it's impossible for you not to be who you are. So when anybody asks you as a child, what do you want to be when you grow up, which is an odd question, I already am, thank you very much, go away. You know? What they mean to say is, how do you want to earn your living? Oh, that's another question. But how a person earns their living very often is taken on as a mask with which you fuse. And then you say, well, I'm a doctor, I'm an engineer, I'm a whatever it is that my study and livelihood is based on. But that's not our identity. Our identity is the whole thing, and then we express that in our karma. And our karma depends on how strong we are. So I would suggest that we should give up the idea that there's good people and bad people, and more consider that when a person is in their power, then they perform karma that corresponds to their essential self, which is very pure. And then when a person's not in their power, then they perform karma which is at odds with who you are, and at odds with what you are, and which is also against your own conscience. So the conscience is a very important little feature in the whole question of karma, because if we act according to our conscience all the time, chances are you're authentic, you're real, you're doing pure karma, good karma. And then I researched this a fair amount, that most people go against their conscience about 6-7 times a day. Is that right? Usually over small matters. And why would we do that? It's the oddest thing. You know, because it's not somebody else's rules, which is understandable, you would break them, but your own rules. Why would we do that? And my conclusion is only because you're not strong enough to go according to your conscience. So you need strength. It's very expensive to do the right thing. It's very cheap to do the wrong thing. Most people will tell you the opposite, but I find that, no. You need strength to what sometimes people call it moral fiber, but I don't really like that expression, moral fiber, because I'm against the idea of morality. But I think morality causes difficulty in people's karma. And the reason for this is that it is enforced with some degree of violence, which is contrary to spirituality. What do you think? Yes, no, never thought of that before. Anyway, the other thing is that it tends people towards dishonesty. So that's another reason why I don't like it. And a few other reasons I won't go into now, because we're going to go with karma. So when some circumstance comes up in front of you, very often it requires you to act. So something comes in front of you, it requires you to act, and then you decide what you will do, or what you will say, or what you will think, or how you will feel. There's a decision involved in that, and it's all very, very fast. This is why it's good practice to put behind your eyes, so you get at least another quarter second to figure out what you're going to do. And you have to connect with your conscience, which is a rapid thing, and then you have an instinctive conscience. And then it will tell you, okay, you should do this. And then you either do it or you don't do it. Now, when people go against their conscience 6-7 times a day, every day, for most of your life, starting at the age of about 4 or 5, that's a lot of times to go against your conscience. And the problem with that is that it causes your conscience to become dysfunctional, and therefore unreliable. This is why you need morality. So if you don't know what to do, then you will consult with somebody else who may or may not have your best interests in mind when they advise you. So the external moral authorities who advise you, first of all, you'd be your parents, And if they're good, then they do have your best interests in mind, but not everybody has perfect parents. Anybody has perfect parents? No, they're just people, they're just humans, you know, like the rest of us, so they have their imperfections. Then come your teachers, you know, who are also just humans like everybody else. And then the third set of external moral authorities is the religious leaders. Then you may have, you know, the government, the media, and various, you know, external groups of people or individuals who let you know this is right, this is wrong, in this culture we do like this, in that culture we do like that, this is us, that is them, you know, all this sort of thing. And it interferes with the voice of conscience, because many times your conscience will say, no, you can't do that, that's not right. But if you do what your conscience says, you will be heavily penalized. So you have to be very wealthy so that you can pay the price. Wealthy not just only in money, but in personal strength to endure whatever the payment is. So it's complicated. So we say, okay, I choose to perform karma that corresponds to my integrity and my actual authentic self, you see. But you come up against these situations where it will cost you, and then you have to see, are you strong enough to do it? And most people aren't. So, in a spiritual practice, one of the things we want to do is to strengthen our soul, which we do with meditation. And I was telling you a little bit yesterday morning how I meditate, or more or less. And you have to take strength, you have to take light, so that you can do. And if you begin to act and think and talk and write according to your conscience, the dysfunctionality of your conscience gets sorted out, and it starts to be very reliable and very functional. And another consequence of that is that you can tell who's lying. This is very convenient. You know, because the worst thing is if somebody lies to you and you don't know, you get deceived. That's a big mistake, to get deceived. So if your conscience is working well, you will not be deceived, because you'll immediately see that this person is lying or this person is doing something that's not true. So this refined conscience is the most valuable instrument that a human being can have. And you refine it and upgrade it by following its voice continuously and regularly at any cost, which is always very high, so sorry about that. And then also it activates your perception, that you can see, for example, you can see the future better. So before it comes, you can see it coming. That means you're ready. It doesn't take you by surprise. This is also very convenient, because then in advance you know how you're going to respond to it. Like a tennis player will understand what shot is coming, and you're ready and you do what you have to do. Yeah? So this is karma. And there are days when you decide, I am going to do a wrong karma. And I have a right to do a wrong karma, and that's what I'm going to do. Right? Have you had days like that? Of course, you must have. You know, I choose to mess up today. Okay, fair enough. You know, we have rights. And so then you have to calculate, do you want to pay that price? You may say, yes, I'm going to do it anyway. Okay, fair enough, do it anyway. But you will pay the price. If you enjoy that, that's good. You have a right. So one very important thing about the knowledge of karma is said to be the ability to see the three aspects of time, the past, the present, the future. So you're in the present moment, some circumstance comes along in front of you, and generally speaking, you will respond to that circumstance in the way that you have historically responded to similar circumstances. That is the way people are made. And the word we use for that is sanskara. You've heard this word, right? Sanskara. And so we are in a way predisposed to have breakfast the way we always have breakfast, take our shower the way we always take our shower, drive the way we always drive, walk the way we always walk, be stupid the way we always be stupid, you know, look good the way we always look good. So we have all these habits that we do. And when we're learning about karma, we find ourselves looking at all these different elements that play in the game of karma, because we start to realize that it's up to me what kind of future I want. And whatever karma I do now, it dictates my future. Can't do anything about the past, so the best thing about the past is to just let it be the way it is. It's fine the way it is, no problem. In the present moment is like a razor's edge in between the past and the future, and it endures for, let's say, 1 second. So in that 1 second of the present moment, you are free to do what you want to do or think or say. But as soon as that second is passed, it's over. It's history, there's nothing you can do about it. And you just have to take the consequences. You can't say, oh, I'm sorry, terribly sorry, I didn't mean to say that. So when we're very conscious about this stuff, we tend to be a bit more accurate so that we don't make mistakes. When we make mistakes is when we're inattentive or we are upset, emotionally upset by something or another, or we are weak, you know. So if we are emotionally upset, it's connected with being weak. So again and again, my conclusion is that our problem is we're not strong enough, which is why meditation is good, because it keeps on making us more and more strong. And strong means that you're faster and you're more competent in whatever it is you want to do. Another aspect is that you're expecting to be held accountable for whatever you do. That's a good headspace to be in, you know. Being actors, you're always on camera, right? I'm on camera, but I forget about it. Somebody's watching you all the time. You yourself can watch yourself all the time. It's not nice to be hyper-vigilant, that's too stressful, but Just find a sense of awareness where you just practice to be a little bit on the side of yourself, so you're looking at yourself, not like 24/7, but whenever it's necessary, whenever it's important, take a look. And whenever something goes wrong, you can replay that scene because you have an internal replay button. You know, all these video machines are very useful for that. And try to watch yourself. Now, what did I do that I didn't intend to do? Or where was I inattentive? Or where was I under the influence of some other person or some situation? So we also need to look at influences, and there are a lot of influences. For example, it's a grey day and you feel you have a bad mood. So that's going to influence what you do that day. And by noticing the influences, you can also bring to bear choice. You decide. The external influence makes you want to feel rather moody and like that, but you decide you want to be moody that day or not. Does it serve you well? You know, or do you just want to spend time being moody? You have the right to do that, but you decide, yeah, oh, today is a perfect day to be melancholy, so I'm going to be melancholy all day, and that's just that. Anybody doesn't like it, too bad. I will go take a walk in melancholy and write melancholy poetry. That's okay, you know, because you have a melancholy self too, you know. So sometimes the circumstances will activate particular personalities that are inside you. And it doesn't make you schizophrenic. You have a right to all these internal people, because it makes for the richness of who you are. But the other thing that you don't necessarily want is, you know, when people are in survival, a lot of people are in survival, then that's a very big influence. To be in survival means that, you know, some drama has happened and you're surviving it. You know, you come out of a war or some horrible situation or a dysfunctional family. Most people grow up in dysfunctional families, right? So that's also going to influence how you handle things, you see. And so a very important part of studying about karma is that you go back to all of these influences that when you are a child, it goes straight in, no filter. That's it. You're scarred for life, you know. But then you can turn it to your advantage once you understand it. Once you have to understand your wounds and your handicaps and all of these scars and so on. You have a right to them, but you don't want to be victimized by them. But that's optional. So, whatever happens to you, you can say, oh, it's my karma, this bad thing happened to me because I deserved it. But actually, it's better not to do that, because it's depressing if you do that. Much better is to say, okay, this thing happened because it's teaching me something about humanity, about life, about, you know, what the world is. And you acquire special skills by looking at it like that, you know. Otherwise, you just say, oh, this bad thing happened to other person. You say, you deserve it, you're a bad person, this is why. No, it's nothing like that. You have to sometimes say, it is destined. This thing had to happen. Whatever it was, you just say, it is what it is. Now, how did it impact me? What am I going to do with this impact to make it profitable for me and to my advantage? Because it has that possibility. It's up to us if we use it to our profit. And I think the importance of learning about all this is to be able to take anything and make it profitable. What they say, make lemonade out of lemons, whatever, you know. So these things, whatever happened to us, they may be really horrible, but they contain deep wisdom for us to enable us to transcend the ordinariness of our condition. And so the attitude of somebody who really works with the idea of karma is whatever it is, it's okay. And if I had to do this whole scene all over again, I would do it the same way. I wouldn't change anything. Because the enriching, valuable gems that come out of it are the best. So our relationship with good and bad and so on is ultimately is good, because it's to my advantage. And it's never too late in life to begin to think about these things in a way that is very, very personally profitable, right? Now, have you ever tried to change another person? Right, yeah. It's a waste of time. Because, you know, if you apply this idea that everything is predestined, then that person is destined to be the way they are. And why would you use your valuable time and energy to make them something different which they cannot be? Better is to come back to the self and say, okay, being as these people are this way, how am I going to handle myself? You have to drive defensively in this area. So sometimes give them a wide berth, enjoy your karma, see you later. Sometimes you actually